This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
The left is melting down about these war plans that were leaked in these secret chats between defense officials. We'll have more on that throughout the show today, but I don't really think this is the epic meltdown moment that they're hoping for, but nevertheless, we'll keep an eye on the story. And a fake hate crime hoax. Thanks to John Kensel for sending this to me, to my way. I shared it with Dr. Wolf Riley, who's the author of the book Hate Crime Hoax. But apparently, an Allentown City Hall employee was charged with planting a noose on her own desk in January. And she fabricated physical evidence. A hate crime hoax. We'll talk more about that this hour as well. But this is the day, Monday, you know, we have all the weekend shows. We have all the craziness of the week to break down. And there's a guy who joins us every Monday to help do it. His name is Bill D'Agostino. He's on X at @band_Bill. He's with the Media Research Center. And he joins us now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Bill, how you doing, my man?
Doing great, Rich. How's it going?
It's going all right. I'm having a better day than many people on the left are as they try to figure out where they're going here. You know, I said the equivalent I used earlier was it's like a child's party when all these kids are running around and you're waiting for an adult to figure out what the group activity is going to be. That's what the Democrat Party reminds me of right now.
And there's just no adults there. The kids have to make their own fun.
Make your own fun. Until then, it's just chaos. It's just pure chaos until somebody comes in with a whistle, blows the whistle and says, all right, now we're doing painting, you know?
But who is that adult going to be, Rich? I mean, I think everybody's kind of waiting to see who that adult is. We saw that poll that came out, what was it, last week?
Showing that AOC.
AOC is apparently the adult in the room. I mean, do they want to hold auditions maybe for a different adult or... Oh, no.
It's a great, great point. It's a great question. Look, I mean, that's the bottom line. They don't know who they want to be when they grow up. So you can try the Gavin Newsom route, Josh Shapiro route, AOC route. I mean, the fact that Bernie Sanders is bringing AOC everywhere he goes, I think is a huge mistake because of all her woke lefty ideas. But we'll see. All right. What do you got for us this week, Bill, from looking at the media and where they were and what they've been saying?
Well, yeah, there's a continued firestorm, of course, over all of the Alien Enemies Act deportation flights that are happening. Judge Boasberg has basically become the hero of the left because, as we know, the media and the Democratic Party basically oppose any and all deportations for any reason whatsoever, apparently all the way down to criminal illegal alien gang members. Even they are not grounds to be deported in the left's fancy little worldview that they have going for them.
Yeah, I think siding with violent, illegal criminals is just a bad political move. I mean, maybe I don't know politics as well as I should, I guess. I don't know. But this is like if you're on team violent, illegal, criminal, alien, I think you're in the wrong place. Yeah, I mean, like in terms of winning hearts and minds.
Right. Yeah, it's a pet peeve of yours, you're saying.
So we got now talk to me, give me an audio clip you want to play. It's a compilation I think you got.
So this is kind of a rundown of what the coverage the past week or so has looked like of the Alien Enemies Act deportation flights.
Perfect. Let's do a cut 30.
President Trump's new fight with a federal judge. after invoking a 200-year-old law to deport hundreds of Venezuelan migrants.
An 18th-century law that was the basis for some of the darkest chapters in America's history.
Questions about a rarely used centuries-old law.
A centuries-old law designed to be used in times of war.
Invoking a more than 200-year-old law.
200-year-old law.
Centuries-old law.
Centuries-old law.
Centuries-old law.
The last time it was used was during World War II, when it was used to put Japanese Americans in internment camps.
In World War II, this authority led to the internment of Japanese Americans.
It's how they ended up justifying the internments during World War II.
Concerned that these migrants were denied due process.
The removal of immigrants without any due process.
Little to no due process.
They're being deported without any due process.
There are serious due process concerns.
This is about rule of law and due process.
It's a disturbing use of this old law.
We're watching them utilize the federal law enforcement state to literally snatch people off of the streets. If this were
right,
a medical drama.
Let's jump in. You know, a couple observations, Bill, and you know this being at the Media Research Center, how they all say the same freaking thing over and over again. They all say the same thing.
Yeah, that was the aim with this, was to show the uniformity of thought and messaging with all of this coverage. And the way we broke it down, we wanted to show the three basically main pieces of the argument that they're making, which is A, this is a very old law. And I guess the subtext there is because it's really old, therefore it's not valid anymore.
Right.
FDR once used it to intern Japanese Americans. Therefore, it's never valid to be used. And they're making this kind of circuitous due process argument as though these were criminal trials happening, not routine deportations of illegal aliens who shouldn't be in the country anyway, who also most of them have a pretty long rap sheet on top of it. Right. And so due process, as it would for an American citizen facing a criminal trial, doesn't really apply in this context. Right. But they're yeah. weaving that in because it sounds good.
Yeah, you just say due process over and over and over again, and you don't have to deal with the fact that there's nothing under the law that gives illegal criminal immigrants due process, but there still actually is a little bit of due process for them in the sense that, you know, if they're already in a criminal justice system to begin with, they've had due process. That's how the ICE knows that they're there. Because they've got a phone call or they come up in the system, they went through due process and they're here illegally. So it was a point that was made by Tom Homan, which I thought was a really good one. All the people they're targeting here are people that are somehow already in this system. Well, you don't get in the system without some sort of due process. Otherwise, you're not in the system. Like, you're not just randomly going to places and picking up people and then doing a blood test to determine if they're Trende Aragua criminals, like while they're on the plane, you know, and then turning back right. and dropping off the ones who didn't make the cut. Like, there's a process here by which they're identifying these people, and that process is through the law enforcement process, which is literally due process, but they don't get the same due process when it comes to deportation because they're not here legally. It's just
right. and
funny
it's
how
not
we have to explain
trial.
This. Right.
Right. Yeah, it's like if the media suddenly went into a church during mass and started saying, well, where's the equal time for the Quran and the Hadith? Right. And it just repeat that over and over again without anybody at any point asking the question of who said they're supposed to be.
All right. CNN was forced to contend with a poll showing that 63% of Americans actually favor these deportation flights. It's not really much of a surprise here, Bill. Again, do you want to be on team violent, illegal, criminal immigrant, or do you want to be on team safe communities? Are you on team Trende Aragua or anti? Like, it's like shirts and skins here. You know what I mean? Not too complicated. Right. Cut 31.
63%. According to the latest Fox News poll, say that they favor deporting those immigrants. So that's a pretty high number. Can you square that with what we just heard from Priscilla's reporting?
Yeah, I think that obviously the president has kind of blanketed the airwaves with saying that all of these people deported are criminals. And given the fact that we reporters like Priscilla, we have very limited information to who exactly has been deported. The government has not handed over names. I know CBS got a hold of a list of names, but that hasn't been provided to those who are asking for who was actually deported. And there is a difference between someone who came into the country illegally versus someone who overstayed their visa, that's not a crime, versus someone who has no criminal record, no criminal history. Mm-hmm. And based on my reporting, based on clearly Priscilla's reporting, there are some Venezuelan nationals whose family members, whose lawyers say that they were deported, who have no criminal record, who have no criminal history, that they legally applied for asylum or were trying to gain status, where some of them were in the middle of proceedings, and then they were deported.
Bill, give me your reaction to that grim, grim, very depressing news report on CNN.
Right. I mean, the thing that jumps out to me the most is how credulously they are repeating the claims of immigration lawyers who are representing trained Aragua members. Right. They say, right, like, oh, well, he says he's not a member. And it's like, oh, he says he's not a member. OK, sorry. Welcome back in, chief. Our mistake. Right. Like that's not how this works. And as Tom Homan pointed out this weekend, some of them do not have a criminal history in America. That doesn't mean that they're not members of the gang, right? Like if there's no valid like wing of Tren de Aragua that haven't committed crimes that we're trying to keep around, right? Like we're not interested in only deporting the people on the ground who are, say, like selling drugs or doing gun crime, but keeping their HR department. Right. If you're in a terrorist organization, you're out, period. And so if like whether or not this or that individual member of Tren de Aragua has yet committed, let's say, homicide, is sort of immaterial. If you're a member of a terrorist organization, you're a member of a terrorist organization. And Tom Homan's going to get you out of here. It's really that simple. This is not complicated stuff unless you're on CNN.
It reminds me of one of the funniest lines from the movie Austin Powers, and I know it's like 50 years old now, but when he says that she ran the militant wing of the Salvation Army, it's like, you know, there's no like peaceful wing of Tren de Aragua. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, well, they ran the bake sale department of Tren de Aragua. Like you're part of a violent gang, okay? You're part of an international gang. We don't really want you here. Whether or not you were in the car wash detail or not, it's really not the point, okay?
Right.
Sorry if it's guilt by association.
I don't care if you were the getaway
driver. Okay, let's continue here. It's great to have Band Bill with us from Media Research Center. Follow Bill DeAgostino on X at @Band_Bill. He puts together a lot of these great montages, including the compilation that we heard earlier of the media saying the same thing over and over and over again when it comes to these deportation flights. Bill, who is Ellie Mistel? How am I saying that? I don't watch MSNBC. I know you have to, and I'm sorry you do.
Yeah, Ellie Mistel is a bit of a legendary figure in the hallowed halls of the Media Research Center. Whenever he goes on TV, we're probably going to get a bunch of social media engagement immediately afterwards. We call him Angry Racist Don King because of that spectacular haircut that he has.
Oh, that's the guy.
So now you know who I'm talking about.
Now I know who you're talking about. That, yeah, he does look like Don King, like the lesser Don King, but the angrier, more racist version.
Yeah, he's a bit of a black supremacist, I would say. He's a pretty routine guest on MSNBC for how stupid some of his commentary is. Kind of alarming. I think my favorite thing that I've caught him saying was calling the founding fathers racist, stupid jerk faces, I believe is the verbatim quote.
You know, there are certain times, like last week, for example, when Matt DeSantis and I were excited that Bernie was having AOC at his rally, we knew there would just be some real gems, you know, just great audio gems that would come out of this. So is that like it for you when you're sitting there at the Media Research Center and you're like, oh, they got the lesser, more racist Don King on. We know this is going to be a good one. You just get excited?
Yeah, when Ellie Mistel is on Morning Joe, you know there's going to be at least one banger in there. Always, basically always.
Well, let's take a listen to the banger without further ado. Go ahead.
Okay, so like what?
Well, we could eliminate all voter registration laws.
See, when Democrats get in charge, we try to protect voting rights. We don't make voting easier. Now, I'm all for voter eligibility requirements. We might disagree about what those requirements should be. But, you know, I'm going to say that, like, there should be an age limit to vote. I might say 16. You might say 18. But I'm not going to say 8. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to agree that there should be voter eligibility requirements. But once you're eligible, mm-hmm. why do you have to pre-register? Why is that even a thing? It wasn't a thing in this country at the founding. We didn't have voter pre-registration in 1787. We didn't have voter pre-registration in 1821. We only started having voter registration, generally speaking, after the Civil War. Why do you think that is? It's because a bunch of freed African slaves were migrating up north, and all of a sudden New York was like, we need some registration up in here, right? A bunch of immigrants from Europe, mainly Ireland and Italy, were coming to New York. People were like, oh, we need some registration in here. If you're eligible to vote, you should be automatically registered to vote, and that is how they do it everywhere else but us. Everywhere else but us either has automatic registration or some other form of forced registration for everybody, so that you don't have this disconnect between eligible voters and registered voters. That's the first law in the book that we could change. And it's to see how that's different than just saying we have to protect voting rights. No. We don't have to protect voting rights. We have to expand voting rights so that the 90 million people that sat on the couch and sat out this last election between democracy and fascism, so that maybe they have a little bit of an easier time to get up off the couch and come participate in the democracy. Yeah.
Bill, I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. His hair is way too distracting for me. I kind of tuned out. Between that and the jacket that Al Sharpton's wearing, which looks like a tablecloth, it was very hard for me to concentrate. So can you make sense of that for me, please? Would you do me a solid?
Yeah, if you want me to distill all that down to one little bite-sized sentence, it's Ellie Mistall thinks we should be automatically registering 16-year-olds to vote in federal elections. And I mean, why do you think he wants that, right? It's because that would boost Democratic Party turnout. And if that wasn't clear already, his comment about the 2024 election being between fascism and democracy, I think probably hammered that point home for anybody still listening.
I also love the idea that if you have people register to vote, that is somehow racist to register people to vote when everybody has to register to vote, even though they try to make it as easy as possible now. Like, this actually backfired in Pennsylvania. As my friend Linda Kearns pointed out, when Josh Shapiro did the automatic voter registration for anybody who got their driver's license, well, a lot of people in cities don't get driver licenses because they take public transportation all the time. But all the people in the rural parts of PA, they all need a driver's license. So you wound up automatically registering more Republicans. But even when the left tries to do things like that, we're still screaming, I guess, because you can't just on a whim decide that even if you weren't registered, today's the day that you decide you want to be. And if you're 16, you should be allowed to vote. And they're doing that in places like Newark, New Jersey, and other cities. The governor of New Jersey wants to expand that to every city, every place around the state. So the whole state, 16 years old to be able to vote in school board elections. Sure. Because you know what, Bill, when you're 16, having a beautiful new school building with state-of-the-art everything and how higher teacher salary sounds great. You're not paying for it. What the hell do you care?
Right. Which that is the idea, is you should probably be a member of the workforce and paying taxes if you're going to start voting on policy. That's the founding principle. I think it's kind of wild that Ellie Mistall, of all people, the guy who called the founding fathers racist, stupid jerk faces, is talking about, well, we should model our voting laws based on how it was when the country was founded. It's like, Ellie, you don't want that. Do you remember the passage about white landowning men being the only people who were allowed to vote? Like, why is a MSNBC Democrat pointing to the way voting laws were in the 1700s and saying that's the model I want? Right. The guy's understanding of history is so warped that he doesn't even know how to make the point that he's trying to make. But you definitely don't do it by pointing to America's founding and saying those are the voting rules that you want.
You know, they literally in New Jersey had to change the name of an elected county official from freeholder to county commissioner because Murphy thought it was racist in the wake of George Floyd's death. Because originally, back when they first had the term, in order for you to hold office, you had to own land free and clear of any debts. So you were a free holder. And he felt that in the year 2020 that was racist. And everyone's like, first of all, I don't even know what the hell a freeholder is. But secondly, that's a stupid argument. But it just reminds me of that kind of lunacy. It's like, well, pick your lane, man. Which is it? Were the rules all racist then? Or is that the way we need to go back to? I don't understand. But these are the same people that also perpetuated the myth that we would have thousands of people dropping dead of thirst waiting in line to vote in Georgia.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that passage. Yeah, we did a whole explainer back then on all of the lies that the media were spreading about that voting law. I mean, that's the one that Biden, if I recall correctly, called Jim Crow 2.0. And you want to hear something wild, Rich, is the fact checkers never touched that one. They never touched the claim that Georgia's voting law was Jim Crow 2.0. Imagine that.
I think he called it Jim Eagle. Didn't he? Didn't he say something like, this is going to make Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle?
You're right. You're right.
Which I don't even know what that means, other than I guess an eagle is a bigger bird than a crow. Like, I don't really. Did he think that Jim Crow was literally named after I never really got that part, but all right. Jim Eagle, you know, there you go. As always, Bill, it's fun having you on the show. I appreciate kicking off the week with you every Monday. It's always a blast. Follow Bill on X at @band_Bill and follow the great work that they do at the Media Research Center and newsbusters.org. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks as always, Rich. Take it easy.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
And that's the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VanariaDental, VanariaDental.com. So it seems like what we're learning about this accidental sharing of information with this guy, Jeffrey Goldberg from The Atlantic, as far as I can tell, the story is confirmed. It was an accident by Mike Waltz, from what we're understanding. The White House, vis-a-vis spokesperson Brian Hughes for the National Security Council, acknowledged a mistake, saying Goldberg's report in The Atlantic appears to be authentic. And he was added accidentally to a Signal group message by Mike Waltz, the National Security Advisor. The participants in the group chat included J.D. Vance, the vice president, Pete Hegseth, the secretary of defense, John Ratcliffe, the national security director, and Tulsi Gabbard, as well as deputy chief of staff Stephen Miller. And one of the big takeaways was actually that J.D. Vance was originally opposed to the strikes. He thought the administration was bailing out European shipping lanes. But anyway, the other issue is that the messages were set to auto-delete, something that is a feature on these encrypted messaging apps where the messages can delete. And they were set to delete after a certain period of time. So Goldberg was raising the point that there may be a violation about the preservation of records under federal law. Either way, this is not a good look for Mike Waltz, the national security advisor to the president. The report does seem to be authentic. We'll keep following it for you as any developments come out throughout the day. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. More to come. Breaking news all around us. Jimmy Failla is going to stop by. Don't go away.
But it's not strange for me, because you know how many times I come home and there's a guy in my bed? You know what I mean? So this is like a tamer version of that. Sometimes Jenny, you know, gets behind the payment with the landscaper, you know.
Gotta do what you got to do.
Let him trim an extra bush if you're picking up what I'm putting down. Good night, everybody.
Whoa.
All right.
I thought the Pelosi joke Saturday night was enough. Learned your lesson.
I'm just conditioning the PHT audience for what they know is coming up at 7 p.m. Okay. Standards and practices. Clocks out at 6:59. In comes Fox Across America. Good to see you.
With your executive producer in the room, too.
I brought Vic to chaperone. You know what this reminds me of? So Victor's the executive producer of Fox News Saturday Night. When I had Lara Trump on, she has like a Secret Service guy in the studio, just like chaperoning the thing. You know, he's in the radio chair in like those adult movies.
Well, it's like, remember the guy who just followed Michael Corleone around and never talked in Godfather 2?
Yeah.
But was everywhere. And then ultimately, I think he tried to kill Hyman Roth.
Yeah, maybe.
If he's the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Vic is going to strangle me with piano wire before this is over.
It's about time.
But it's also having him in the room as the adult in the room, because there was a time we were on set on Fox News Saturday Night, and I said to you during one of the breaks I was going to make a Tim Waltz, a Doug Emhoff joke, And in my ear, like the voice of God is like, don't make a Doug Emhoff joke yet. We don't want to get sued.
I think it depends on the joke, but you were probably in one of those gray areas where there was a report on like ownthelibs.net that was like, Doug Emhoff is like human trafficking children. And you were going to like come back from break with like, at least I don't have any kids in my knapsack. And then the next thing you know, we're all getting sued again. You know? Yeah, oh, for the things we do? I don't mean here. I mean you and me there.
Listen, buddy, you got a lot of shows coming up. We got to talk about that. But we started our day together on America's Newsroom with Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer. What on earth were they thinking putting the two of us on such a highly respected news program at 10:30 in the morning? Do you have any idea what they were? Was it an accident? Did they lose a bet?
It's back to like the fair and balanced. Remember when we used to do fair and balanced?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like the segment before us, they had intelligent people. This was the balance. It was like, let's rein it back into the middle now, make the viewer at home think they too could be doing this. I don't know. I thought it was fun though. It was actually good. You know what? Monday is my favorite day to do news in general because I'm always doing it at like, somewhat of a disadvantage based on what I've done to myself over the weekend.
Yeah.
So Monday's the only day I feel like I have to try, and that was pretty effortless.
Yeah. So you're good now. You just kind of cruise the rest of the week.
Yeah, the rest of the week, you're fine. You're also somewhat sober.
Yeah.
Like my Saturday, after my show wrap Saturday night, I was definitely overserved, but I was telling you this earlier. I was the guy doing the serving, so I can't really point a finger at the guy who overserved me. But I was at my house Saturday night. We lost a lot of good men out there, man. Holy hell.
It was rough, huh?
Yeah, I'll say.
Well, you deserved it after the Pelosi joke, so well done.
He loves this Nancy Pelosi joke about, hold on a second, he brought it up like three times. It was a joke in my monologue about the way Nancy Pelosi, she was criticizing Chuck Schumer. And she said, I myself don't give away anything for nothing. And it really sounded like you asked her to do something in bed, and she was like, fine, but what about, you know? And it's just the way she said it. Because you know what happens to people? Honestly, if you're like 85, 90, okay, you've been saying certain things the same way for 90 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a mannerism that's just like, oh, you press play and you're only going to say it in that one way. And that one way sometimes contradicts the forum you're speaking in. Meaning in Congress, I myself don't give away anything for nothing. Isn't really the way you want to say that. But it is the way you say it in a back room when you're trying to like horse trade to get some corrupt bill passed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what you're saying. She's saying, I'll vote for your bill if we get the water park in my district.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's how they spoke in the Western saloons that she was familiar with in the 1800s. So
She got it done.
But well done with that. The show's doing great. Obviously, you have some great guests on the show, and you'll have a great guest coming up in a couple weeks in me. And thank you for donating tickets to our Travis Manion Foundation Radiothon, which we raised $125,000 for the veterans.
Listen, when I heard I could give away three sets of tickets so I didn't have to appear on the morning show,
yeah.
I'm kidding. Shout out to Nick. Nick, I love you, boo. It's giving you a hard time. But well, yeah, that was a win. It was a win, and it was a great. You guys run a class radiothon. I was telling you this, and I wasn't even kidding. Okay, when I started out in radio, I was on the stations where you can't take the supplements they're advertising. You know, like the weight loss supplements. This is a class station. I didn't start out on these stations. You know,
this is a class studio, by the way. Look at this.
Oh, this? Oh, because you're in my. I forgot about that. Yes, this is where I do
this
radio.
This is where your studio.
So yeah, we're in Fox News headquarters. We are in.
Nice.
The daily studio where I do Fox Across America. It's got a lot of fancy cameras and stuff and all the seats and everything like that.
So we should have a cigar. Can we have a cigar right now?
Doesn't it have that vibe?
It has a vibe of, I'll tell you what it has a vibe of. Three of us, which we've done before in your office, post-show, pre-show, having a bourbon and just chatting about the news of the day and making fun of people. And that's what I want to do right now.
Is have a non-alcoholic bourbon.
No,
like we did in my office that time. The alcohol reverse fermented wine that I serve in my office. Narc Zeoli is in the house. He's like, you know that time we snorted those Percocets before we went on with Martha McCallum?
Get Jump Street right now.
Holy hell. He's here.
Busted.
He's
busted.
Rich Zeoli's not on the radio. He's wearing a wire. He's just, this is all an elaborate setup to find out what really goes on. It's not true. We run a pretty class operation. You know what happened to Fox, for real?
What happened?
Inside, you know, like in the news business. Mm-hmm. Okay, like I grew up watching a version of news where people smoked cigarettes and punched each other in the face at Deadline.
Yeah.
But Fox happened like post that, and we already had established bars like Langen's, which is the bar we take you to after my show tapes.
Keep that.
No, the Langen's is there, but it had been there. In a different form, it was called, we called it Studio L. And it was the bar next to Fox, same owners, but it was in a different location, a little bit closer to Times Square. So that was always the go-to. And I think it was a strategic move to probably keep the in-house boozing down, as if you could just have a place 10 feet away. Because you just want it to not happen. You know, like when you're in a bar, they're like, don't call the cops from the bar.
Yeah.
So they just, if everyone could just drink on that side of the street, we're good. And boy, do we drink on that side of the street.
Holy I don't know what you're talking about. Jimmy Fallon's in studio, in his studio at Fox Across America. It's a very odd time-space continuum thing we got going on right now.
Yeah.
We've been together all day, way too much time. I'm not going to...
You're coming up on my show.
I'm not going to need to see you again for a couple weeks, by the way.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, thank God I'm not on again. So when am I on?
The 18th? I believe April 18th.
April 18th. Yeah, thank God.
2026.
But, which is ridiculous that I have to wait that long, by the way. I mean, as much as I'm saying thank God, it's also ridiculous I have to wait that long.
I agree. I said April 2026 was too far. I said do this in 25. They said no. So we want to tell you. I'm right there with you.
It's 25.
But I hope you told those people who bought the tickets.
We'll see you next year. Today we talked about a lot of craziness that the Democrats are going through. My question for you is this. Does AOC on the campaign trail help or hurt Bernie Sanders? Does it make him look good to have the young bartender hottie out there?
But are you attending the idea that like he's running? Because he's not running for president. Do you think? Like, do people think that? I don't know what people think these days. Because it's obviously there's like a vacuum and someone's going to step in and fill it. But wouldn't he be? Because he's like 82, isn't he?
Yeah. He said he's old and tired. That's what he said. So, you know, do you think he's given the mantle to AOC? Like, here, you take my socialist mantle and run with it?
Maybe a little bit of that's going on because she's young and, you know, would bring some new energy in a weird way. But I always consider her like an Instagram influencer with a side hustle in Congress. Mm-hmm. And she'd have some adulting to do if she wanted to step up to be party leader. Senator, yes. But there's the same concern. If she leaves Congress, it would devastate the prostitution industry in Queens. I mean, she has single-handedly, by ignoring that district, it's actually called the Boulevard of Sweethearts. If you guys are looking for love in all the wrong places, he would tell you, no, we this is a funny story. Like, we had Curtis Sliwa on to discuss this because it had become such a huge thing to the businesses and the schools that there were that many migrant hookers over in AOC's district, which is probably the best deliverable for her district, as she has brought the price of Hot Sheets Motel Lovin' down like 80% because there's that much on the market. So it's not to say she hasn't helped people, but I don't know that it works at a national level.
I think the problem is that she is the woke problem the Democrats need to get away from, right? Isn't she the one lecturing about white privilege and Latinx and, you know, misgendering people? That's AOC.
Yeah, she's definitely part of that graduating class of, like, that squad thing. But understand, the people who stick around in Washington are survivalists, and they realize that, you know, the Jamal Bowmans of the world. People have cut. Cori Bush left town. So what I'm saying is, she is guilty of everything you think she's guilty of, but it doesn't mean she couldn't strategically pivot. Like, look at Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom is literally doing the Shaggy song, "It Wasn't Me." You know what I mean? They're like, hey, you were using Latinx every day for 5 years. It wasn't me. CNN did a K-file on it where there's 6 instances of him saying it. But he's like, I don't know what these people are talking about. You're allowed to do that now.
Well, maybe it wasn't you then.
Yeah, we have no episodic memory. You do whatever you want. You know, that's the thing. So if she's smart and she wants to be that national person, she just has to start resetting now. But I don't know if she's smart enough to do that.
This is this cosplay that I'm doing right now, being a national person sitting here in the studio. How many stations are you on now?
A couple hundred, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I just asked you. What are you asking me for?
It's a big number.
We launched
today.
You just launched today in Reading, Pennsylvania.
No, it's not true. Last week we launched EEU in Reading. This week we launched in Scranton.
Scranton.
Dunder Mifflin. Get it right.
Scranton, PA.
Know your Route 81 off ramps.
Yeah.
Scranton, Wilkes-Barre. We'll be there.
They have the Joe Biden Highway up there.
There it is. That's funny. They call me Scranton Jim. And we will be in Mohegan, PA, April 19th.
April 19th.
What's not to love?
It's a good show.
That's a hot show.
How do people get tickets to that?
FoxAcrossAmerica.com. Now, if you go to the website or you go to the Mohegan, Pennsylvania Casino website, which is where they prefer you to go, They advertise it as Laughs and Liberty, but Kennedy and I refer to it as the Slots and Sluts Tour.
Yeah.
Because I play a lot of slots and Kennedy.
Right. Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
There you go. I mean, you guys were there. These people came, the Soul Joles. They know what that show looks like. They saw Kennedy in Potsdam. And someone called into my show on Friday and was like, I've seen Kennedy live. I've never seen you before. I said, oh, great. All awesome. I said, between you and me, I said, what were your expectations of Kennedy's act on the smut scale? Like, did it exceed it? Was it beneath it? And if you haven't seen it before, everybody listening should see it once. She's got a story to tell. And she's, remember, I believe the phrase Trump used was locker room talk.
Yeah.
Locker room talk. Kennedy's act is an Access Hollywood tape. She actually brings Billy Bush along for the ride. It's that good. They cruise around in a bus. You can joke about anything you want. It's going to be great.
And Wilkes-Barre is not that far from our listening area. So I imagine the Zioli Army is going to descend upon Mohegan
you should.
Sun that night.
Should come
I
hang
imagine.
Out.
And the other thing about the locker room talk, we talk about this a lot now, that Trump's back, woke's dead, and so you can say whatever the hell you want again. It's got to be refreshing as a comedian for you in this day and age to be able to, although not that you ever cared about being politically correct or anything like that. I mean, clearly, but
what the most refreshing thing about it is you don't have to have the conversation all the time anymore, because most of us like didn't edit ourselves. You know, I always tell you, like, comedy is not about, you don't read the room, you lead the room. You know, that's mm-hmm. why I am dressed like I always say, I'm dressed like an affordable male stripper and all that stuff. It's really about like owning your space and making sure they know you're bargaining with them in good faith. So the magic trick, even during the outrage era, was if you fire the first few shots at yourself, you just get away with a lot more. So what has changed, and this is, I think, the point you're making on a larger scale, is we're not living in the era of the disclaimer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We were definitely issuing a disclaimer like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years on the road. You'd always be like, well, I'll tell you how it's going to work tonight. I'm going to tell a bunch of jokes and blah, blah, blah. And you would kind of do that, but you do it through jokes. I would never say that as like serious. I would say, you know, if I say anything tonight that offends you, you can email me after the show at gofyourself.com.
Right.
And then the crowd laughs and you get on with the show. But I think we're getting past that a little bit. But this is the part people have to remember. Okay, everything yins and yangs. Do you know how we really overcorrected to the right now and you mm-hmm. can say anything you want?
Mm-hmm.
We're probably going to be in a gulag for this interview in like 8 years because it's going to swing so far left. AOC will be president. And they're like, remember that time you sent her boulevard of hookers in her district? Mow! And then they're just going to shoot us. And that's going to be that.
And I said bat nipples today.
Yeah, you love
Look,
this.
I think it's edgy. That I said it on America's Newsroom, that George Clooney had bat nipples.
Oh, because when he played Batman?
Yeah, did you see Hemmer's face when I said it?
I mean, he probably Googled
it. He was shocked
that
I dropped the nipples on America's Newsroom, that I dropped nipples on America's Newsroom.
I don't think it's what they come to America's Newsroom for.
That's what I'm saying.
But I don't, I it's definitely not the level of, like, conversational expectation.
Vic, if I show my nipples on Fox News Saturday night, is that appropriate?
Well, it depends. But, I'm thinking of Newsroom, and I don't know that Karl Rove has ever drew nipples on his whiteboard. You know, when he comes by with the props? I'm thinking, I'm going to go search it and see. But you were happy. You felt, I feel like you were pleased, and you just want us, you want the reassurance.
No, I don't want the reassurance. I don't need it. Is that what you're suggesting, that I need the reassurance?
I don't know, because it's, I didn't say nipples.
Let me tell you what a stand-up friend I am to you, by the way.
Man.
You left your email. So I didn't do that, just out of respect.
But I do leave it open.
I know.
Like,
I
leave it open.
Checked. I could have checked. I could have gone through your Gmail, found all the stuff you bought, the names
nothing.
Of the people that I didn't do that to you.
Well,
that's called trust. That's friendship. That's loyalty right there. That's what that is right
there. So you're saying I should have your back on this nipples comment if they come calling? On Nipplegate?
On that.
It's no longer Janet Jackson. It's Zioli.
April 19th at Mohegan Sun. Get tickets today by going to their website or by going to Fox Across America and see Jimmy Fallon and Kennedy for the Slots and Sluts or Laughs and Liberty Tour, however you want to call it. And tune in tonight at 7 p.m. for Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon. Good to see you, buddy.
What a hoot. Keep an eye on them nipples.
Yeah, Sally, you're really enthused to be here, I can tell.
I thought it was great. I don't get to be a guest in my own studio a lot.
What is this? Like your charity for the day? Like you go tell Jenny like you did something special, you did something nice? You made the little chubby kid feel good about himself?
I already said that about our America's Newsroom hit. So no, I'll need a new one. Good for you.
All right, we're coming right back. We have an actually really great guest straight ahead, Paula Scanlon. Who's much better looking on camera. Don't go away.
Good.
It's a fun show, and there's breaking news all around us. We're going to talk about the Enemies Act and the judges who are weighing that case. Look, I think the big takeaway on that is that these judges are determined to try to stop President Trump at every single turn. We know that, obviously. But there's another piece of this, too. The other piece of it is that they're trying very, very hard to make a point about Trump's use of executive privilege, executive order, executive powers, when honestly, what he's trying to do is follow the law passed by the Congress. And I think ultimately what you're going to have here is much like with the 14th Amendment, when the Supreme Court finally tackles these issues, the Supreme Court is going to have no choice but to take a deeper look into the way the court has expanded various parts of the Constitution and even the law that it had no business doing. They keep citing, for example, the internment of Japanese Americans. That was the Korematsu decision by the Supreme Court. They talk about birthright citizenship. Well, that case was a Supreme Court decision. The judiciary has gone above and beyond in weaponizing the justice system to be used against the American people. And all of this is coming out right now. And they're fighting this out in court. I just personally think that Trump's winning on this in the court of personal opinion. And to prove that, why don't we play the audio of the president getting greeted at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia? He came in for the big NCAA wrestling tournament, and he was with Senator Dave McCormick. He was with a number of local Republican congressmen, including our buddy Dan Muser. And Matt, who else was there? Do you know who else was there? I think from the delegation. Do you know? Are you there? Are you there?
Did you mention Elon Musk?
I didn't know, from our congressional delegation.
Oh, I don't.
Scott Perry was there. And well, it doesn't matter. Anyway, here's the audio of him entering the Wells Fargo Center. Take a listen. Big reaction. That's a good reaction right there. USA, USA. Look, I think there's a couple of things to this. Obviously, it's Philadelphia, but not everybody there lives in the city of Philadelphia. Clearly, it's a regional thing. People are coming from around the region. But that says a lot that it's at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. And there were a ton of people that live in Pennsylvania there. It was a huge welcome for the president. Crowd was going wild. I don't know if there were any people booing. There might have been a couple people who were drunk and booing. Who knows? But if people were booing, you would know it. You'd hear it, right? That's the difference. You'd hear it. You'd see it. You'd know it. I didn't hear it. I heard cheers, and I heard all kinds of thunderous applause, and I heard chants of USA, USA. So that's what I loved, and I thought it was great. So it says a lot about his popularity and how people are reacting to him and to what he's doing and what he's accomplishing. So on the court of public opinion, whether or not these judges try to block him or not, he's winning in the court of public opinion. That's very, very obvious here. It really is. And the fact that he's with Dave McCormick, Representative Brian Fitzpatrick was there. He was also with Scott Perry, like I mentioned, Dan Muser. He was with a couple of other people. Says, I mean, Fitzpatrick was there. Brian Fitzpatrick was with the president. So that's good. Nope. I think it's good. It shows you that he's uniting Republicans. And then over the weekend, because he was at Bedminster on Friday and Saturday, the two front runners for governor of New Jersey both met with Trump on separate days to try to seek his approval, seek his endorsement, seek his love and affection. Now, I don't know if either of them will get it. I don't know if the president's going to get involved in that race. There are people on who used to work for him who are helping both candidates. So they're obviously either saying to him, endorse my guy or do nothing. And they're both loyal to Trump. Both campaigns have hired people who were Trump operatives. I'm talking about Jack Cicciarelli and Bill Spadia and their campaigns. So I don't know if the president is going to get involved or not in that. But I thought that was very interesting. So he's clearly the leader in the Republican Party, for sure, no doubt, and uniting them. And then the policies and everything that he's doing is getting a lot of great reaction from people across the country. So there's that. All right, Paula Scanlon's going to join us next. She's very happy that the president decided to pull funds from her alma mater, I never say that word right, University of Pennsylvania. And also, she's going to tell us why New Jersey is going to flip red this November. So all that straight ahead. This is our happy hour from the Grand Hotel of Cape May coming up straight ahead. We're streaming live on YouTube. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.